This is the best of RSN Central, so thanks for listening. And don't forget to join us from Monday to Friday on RSN 927 from 10:30 to 1. And if you miss anything from RSN Central, head to our website at rsn.net.au or subscribe to RSN Central on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio.
RSN Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gamblers Help, 1-800-858-858.
Mickey Barlow, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gareth. How are you doing?
Looking forward to catching up with Phil Davis shortly.
Yeah, that's going to be terrific, Phil, in Sydney. And he was snubbed, mate. The All-Star team.
We organised the interview thinking he would be playing centre-half back, but anyway.
I think it'll be a better interview with him not in the team.
I'm a Brisbane fan. Harris Andrews taking on Jeremy Cameron will be one of the
couple
highlights.
Of really skinny, bony type of operators.
But I hope and cross my fingers and toes that they have a fair crack on Friday week.
I'm thinking 85%. I think the scores will be high. The midfielders will go each way. The forwards and backs, they'll compete because they don't want to get shown up, do they? So
no.
I think either end of the ground will be very competitive through the middle. I'm thinking record type of possession numbers.
I think these players, they're so competitive, they're so proud that once they step over that white line and there's a little bit of argy-bargy, that they'll be playing pretty serious.
And especially with the Victorian team, like, I think there's more on the line for the Victorian team. You look at that team, they should win, and they are actually representing their state. They're wearing the coveted jumper, whereas the All-Star team, I don't think they have much to lose, and there's not as much pressure on the shoulders of those players.
Oh, I think the All-Stars will win.
You reckon?
Yeah, I like their side.
Well,
Charlie Cameron, Tommy Hawkins, Bruce Ford, Mickey Walters, Jack Revolt, Hill's a star. So I think Fife and Pendlebury will be a contest and a half, Kelly and Cornelio.
I'm seeing a fairly fair makeup of outside players on the All-Star team. I'm seeing a bruise-free football.
All right, then. Which is probably suitable for that, well, this time of the year anyway. Mickey, hey, Mick, I need to take a quick break so we can spend a lot of time with the former captain of the Giants, Phil Davis, who is one of the best players to talk to in the world of the AFL. So we'll take a quick break and then we'll be back with Phil Davis here on RSN Central. Welcome back to RSN Central, Mickey Barlow. We're about to head to Sydney to catch up with one of your good mates and, of course, a star for the Giants. I speak of Phil Davis, and I think he's in the bus at the moment.
He's on the bus, Gareth. That's Sydney life for you, isn't it? So we've got Phil online. Good afternoon. Morning, Phil. What is there a time difference in Sydney?
No.
It's still morning. That's how I'm going. Good to have you on board, mate. And we've teed up this interview yesterday. We're very excited about the State of Origin, the Bushfire Relief game, Marvel Stadium. 28th of Feb, 7:50 p.m. And I just thought it was a lay-down mazare that Phil Davis would get slotted into that full back line. Not to be, Phil.
No. When you hit me up and I found out, I must admit, I was quickly on the text page. Do you even want to talk to me anymore? So I'm still a wanted man, which is very nice.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have you any time of the week. So what was the protocol, I suppose? Did you have any dialogue with talk us through any sort of process that was for this selection, or is it just pretty much you open the paper on this morning and you're not in there?
It was close to that. It was back to the old under 17 days when you'd read the paper on a Thursday in the newspaper. But I got told, a month or so ago about the squads and got told I was in that. And then Leon Cormier has often said that I didn't make the cut yesterday. And then, about 20 minutes later, the teams came out. So I got a little bit of a heads up, but not too much dialogue floating around, but it's going to be a great game. I'm really looking forward to being a spectator now and watching it.
Do you like the concept, Phil? Do you think that this could be an annual game going forward?
Oh, I think it is. I think it's a pretty good compromise. Obviously, it'd be great, if all the states could play themselves, but that's probably becoming more and more unlikely. But representative footy is great. Any time the best players can get together and play is always something that's very exciting.
And you're from Adelaide, and South Australia, what would you consider your chances against that? That's the age-old discussion. South Australia versus Victoria. You'd back yourself in?
Oh, they're pretty strong at the moment. Yeah.
They look strong.
I had a look at, I think someone whipped up a team not long ago, the South Australians, and we're a little bit thinner than them at the moment. They're pretty stacked. I think these kind of things come and go in waves, a bit like Dean Lewis would say. And we're just probably bit sim. We've got some good young South Australians coming through, so maybe a couple of years with the blokes like Connor Rozier and that really start to dominate the whole competition, maybe we'll have a go then.
Phil, have you enjoyed not being the skipper over the pre-season?
Yeah, it's been a good change of pace, I must admit. Skipping an hour meeting every week's been a nice little advantage so far. But to be honest, the work really cranks up during the season. So I think that's when I'll notice that I've got more time and energy on my hands. So, you know, Stephen and the leadership group are doing a great job, obviously, the fresh leadership group as well. And, yeah, they're doing a super job.
Who, if you don't mind me, who is actually is in that fresh leadership group at the moment?
Yep, so we've got obviously Stephen, and then there's Josh and Matty DeBoer, your boy, still in it last year. The next three are freshies. So we've got Toby Green, Jeremy Cameron, and Lockie Whitfield. So six-man leadership group, a bit of a new spread from previous years.
Where do you think the improvement needs to come? You were so close last year, but to go one better in 2020?
Yeah, it's a good question, because everyone's going to be wanting to get better, and we obviously were well and truly beaten by, you know, the best team last year in Richmond in that final. It's hard. I think, you know, one thing that, you know, you need to do is you need to have really good, you know, premiership season form, in the sense that you coming from outside the top four is a challenge. So, you know, we want to make sure we capitalise, you know, on all our home games, particularly in Sydney, but we've got to finish as high as possible to give ourselves the best opportunity for a double chance. And then from a purely football point of view, we've got to keep on working on turning over the ball in the front half. I think that's, you know, what everyone wants to do. We'll be able to do it a bit in the final series when we play some of our best footy, but we've got to be really consistent in that area.
And you've brought in a top 10 draft pick, young Lockie Ash. How's he settled in to the Giants up there in Sydney?
Yeah, we had a great little draft period there, and, you know, Lockie's, they all come in so much more ready and rearing to go, and he's no exception. He, you know, he looks like he could play AFL footy straight away. Whether or not he'll get a go, we'll just need to see. But no, he's been outstanding. We've also got young Tom Green, I think, at pick 10 too.
Absolutely.
Inside mid is as clean as they come. So we've done very well there, and we've even got a 31-year-old recruiting Sam Jacobs, which has been a nice touch as well. But in the right.
How important will Sam Jacobs be? Obviously, he had a really good career at the Adelaide Crows and also started off at Carlton. Can he be a player that can make a real impact for your football club?
Yeah, I'm pretty bullish on what Sam will be able to do. And working in tandem with Shane, you know, I think we've got, you know, our ruck stocks are in a lot better position than, you know, last year. We were probably relying a lot on Mummy and a little bit on Dawson. I feel like, you know, we're in a really good spot. Some of the stuff Sam's been able to do over the course of his career. And, you know, last year, he was a bit of a forgotten man. He sort of hurt his knee for 10 weeks and then, you know, sort of just slowly got his way back into the team. I feel like he's got some very good footy ahead of him.
Speaking with Phil Davis here on RSN Central, Gareth Hall, Michael Barlow. We'll jump back to the State of Origin match, which is Friday week at Marvel Stadium, as we mentioned. Won't talk too much about the grand final last year. We'll move past that, but having a look at this front six for Victoria, I think they might have nearly run up a score as big as Richmond did on GWS that day in the grand final. It's Robbie Gray, Jeremy Cameron, Toby Green. That's the full forward line, Gareth. Mm-hmm. Then we go to Dustin Martin, Tom Lynch, Steele Sidebottom. So I think the All-Stars will have their hands full with that front six. But what I'm disappointed at is our man Phil Davis is on the line. You would have had the opportunity to actually play on Jeremy Cameron. How would have you rated yourself, rated your chances against your teammate?
Well, I would have had to go all in on that one, because you can't afford to get 10 kicked on you by your teammate, because they can hold that on you forever. He's kicked a lot of goals at me at training. I must admit, depending on what kind of effort is put on defensively through the midfield might determine how many goals get kicked on, because if there's not too much pressure, I don't think you're stopping the forward six, and I reckon Jeremy would have kicked a few on me. But if the boys decide to put on a bit of pressure, I would have been a chance, not a good chance, but a chance.
What's your take on, I suppose you talk about that pressure, and that's the speculation going on in the game is, you know, how seriously will the players take it? I don't think we'll have a repeat of the famed AFLX, but how seriously do you think the players will take this?
Yeah, I think it's a tricky one. I think it'll get to at least the level of sort of like a Marsh Cup. I think it'll be about the intensity will be played at. I don't think it'll be at a finals-like intensity. But it's hard to see, you know. Obviously, the more intense and serious the boys want to take it, you know, I think the game will look better and better. But there's an inherent risk, and also we're still
if there was one player from a different side that you could recruit for 1 year, who would that be?
Oh, it's a good question. If we didn't get Sam Jacobs, I probably would have said Brody Grundy.
Yes.
But we got Sam, so I'm pretty content there. Well, that's a tough question. I must admit, I just love Robbie Gray. He's probably been one of my favourite players for a long time. Even though he's 31, I probably still wouldn't mind just chucking him in the forward line. I just think he's incredible to watch.
RSN Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1800 858 858.
Great to catch up with Mickey Barlow, 0416905052, to join the conversation. We asked Phil Davis the question too. Who would be the one player that you would select from an opposition team to play for your team? In the end, he went, of course, Sammy Jacobs, but he was probably leading towards a Brody Grundy, believing that the Giants need a strong ruckman to help them go one better in 2020. Maxie Gorn is from one of our listeners. And morning, I'm a North Melbourne supporter and we need a marquee player like a Nat Fyfe, a Luke Parker, or a Luke Shuey. Someone who's going to get North notice. That's from Tony.
Mm.
They tried to get Dustin Martin. They weren't far off. Geez, yes. He would have been a handy pickup right now.
Absolutely.
Hello to you, Hornets.
Hello, Gareth. What's happening?
Not much. Your sports update. I'm looking forward to it today.
I agree. Max Gorn is a great suggestion. Yep. When I've been asked this question before in the past, I always said Max because of the work that he does around the ground. I think his overhead marking is so underrated. His ability to drop back and take marks in the hole. He dominates the ruck. Gives his midfielders first use. But I think after watching the grand final last year, Dustin Martin basically single-handedly won two premierships for his football club with his form in the back end of last year and his entire season in 2018, was it? Or 2018, wasn't it? Yeah. I think single-handedly won them a premiership. So I can't go past him as the most valuable player in the league.
I think the best part about Dustin Martin, for me now, that separates him, say, from the Brownlow medalist in that Fyfe, is that he definitely makes players around him better when you watch him live. He gets around his opposition teammates, and he is, I think he's nearly the heart and soul of that lineup at the Richmond Football Club. They all love him when they speak about him, like Jack Riewoldt on the Breakfast Club this morning, Trent Cotchin. Hmm. They all say that he's one of their best mates. And for a man to jump in an Uber and travel all the way to Deniliquin so he could go to one of his mates' weddings probably sums him up.
Absolutely. And he's got that aura about him that only the real greats have. And I think the fact that he doesn't speak all that often makes that mystique and mystery around him even more special. I think he's on a different level to just about everyone else in the league.
So what have you got for us for our sports update today?
Well, Nick Kyrgios has pulled out of another tournament, Gareth. He's out of the Delray Beach Open there in the States. He's got a wrist injury. So that's two tournaments in a row for Kyrgios that he's now missing. He's still included in the doubles with Jordan Thompson. So interestingly enough, Thompson actually pulled out of his first round match as well with an injury. So watch this space to see whether those two go around in the doubles. But yeah, Kyrgios with a bit of an injury cloud at the moment.
I can't work out, so he pulls out of the singles but plays the doubles.
Well, at this stage, he's still in the doubles, yeah. But that's sort of Nick, isn't it? Like, he's just happy to go along, go through the motions, whatever he feels like doing.
Yeah, that is Nick Kyrgios. Mm. Probably had too much to drink. Some of the stories I heard over the Australian Open about Kyrgios is just legendary for some.
What about how he won the Mexican Open last year and he was getting home at 4 a.m. every day?
Yeah.
And he was coming out and beating Rafael Nadal in the semis. And
I think there was a story about Tsitsipas. This is unconfirmed, but a couple of good sources told me regarding he played him in that final. It might have been during the ATP Cup in Brisbane. Anyway, he was having a few pots or pints and with Tsitsipas's brother. And then Tsitsipas walked past him about 11 o'clock. And Nick just cheered him with one of his beers and then defeated him in that tight three-setter.
I think he had one in each hand, the story goes. He's double parked.
Yeah. I don't know how you would feel if your sister passed, but that's life. If you've got it, you've got it.
Should have joined him for a frothy.
The Saints sticking with Geary, which is no surprise. I think he's a wonderful leader for that football club. And we've heard it firsthand how he, I think, has developed into a leader, Jarryn Geary. He was impressive when he arrived here in our RSN studios for the Friday lunch a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the captain of the football club once again, Gareth. They're sticking with him. 6-man leadership group for the Saints. Tim Membry, Dylan Robertson, Jack Billings, Brad Hill and Seb Ross. So Seb Ross, vice-captain once again. They've left out Dan Hannabry. There was a lot of talk around whether Hannabry would be included in that leadership group, but the 6-man pronged attack.
I was listening to an interview with Brett Ratton recently, and it was really interesting to hear the way that they went about selecting their leadership group this year, that everybody was on the agenda regarding who they select in their leadership group. But everybody in the club had a vote. So it wasn't just the playing group or the coaches. It was the person on the door. It was the dietitian. It was the physio. I think it was even the club secretary. So the people that are involved with the players every day and see, maybe see something different than, say, the players do or the coaches. So they had their input into the leadership group, which I found really interesting. It's building that culture there at St Kilda. And I think the Saints can make the eight this year. I'm a big fan.
That's a call.
I'm declaring it right now, yeah.
Wowee.
Do you agree with me? 0416905052.
You must have 15 spots in your eight.
No, do you think the Saints can play finals football? I think they've recruited really well. Oh. I think Hill will be a star as well.
That's a big call.
And anyway. Marcus Stoinis, what's happening?
He's got a shoulder complaint, so he's out of the Cricket Australia match against the England Lions on Friday. So the Stoin with a bit of a shoulder concern won't be seeing him in Australian colours this week.
I'd love to get Adam White's point of view on this situation. The English Lions are just stuffing up the Shield competition at the moment. And does it mean anything?
Maybe not. But But what about when Australia A tour overseas? Do we expect? What do we expect of other nations to be able to put up?
But they're not. We head over there in preparation for the Ashes. What are the English?
Not our Australia A team don't always do that.
Most of the time, I think they do.
Our A team will go to India when we're in England. Like, it's a different tour.
Yeah. Anyway, the fields are coming out now for some of the feature races across the weekend. Sowsabil looks pretty tough to beat in the Silver Slipper there in Sydney in the Millie Fox Stakes. We have some nice fillies going around. Invincible Gem, Miss Fabulous for Chris Lees. And, of course, the feature races there, the Hobartville Stakes. What about this for a lineup?
Cracker, isn't it?
Castle Vecchio, Microphone, Warning, the Derby winner, Shadow Hero, Kubrick, Prince Farwas, the Holy One, Spend Down the Bottom.
What price Microphone?
Microphone's been heavily supported. It probably starts around $3. But
I think it might start with a two in front of it.
No, I can't have him. Microphone. He's not one of mine.
We should have had him on the weekend, Gareth.
Hey, looking forward to the futurity market coming out as well with tab.com.au, which we will monitor as the markets come out with the tab.
As we always do.
Yep.
RSN Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1-800-858-858.
Straight. I'm Batman gets away. Margin now 5 metres. Wild About Town trying hard. Deeper a Rock and Roll Legacy. Then What a Stride, Cheyenne Autumn. I'm Batman in front, pulling away. And I'm Batman. I'm Batman first up in Queensland. Too Good beats a Rock and Roll Legacy.
So our next guest takes the idea of going anywhere, any place to win a race to the extreme. His name is Phil Duggan. He trains that pacer on Batman. Now, he's based in WA, but he's decided to go around the country to find suitable races for his beloved pacer on Batman. And Phil joins us now on the line. Good morning to you, Phil.
Yeah, good morning, Gareth.
Mate, can you just explain the reason why you packed up and decided to put on Batman on the back of a float and go around the country and compete right across the country at different venues?
Our handicapping system in West Australia doesn't suit all horses, and he was one of the worst suited by it. You see, he's got a national rating of 31. He was racing against horses, probably 90, 95 ratings over there, which we don't have. It was getting to a stage where he wasn't getting to the line too good, and I thought if I kept him going over there, he would eventually not try at all. So I only had four horses. I had two broodmares and foals and two that I brought with me, so it was a good time to try a different handicapping system.
Okay, so you packed up and your first port of call was in South Australia at Mount Gambier. How long did it take you to get there from your base in the west?
2 days.
Yep. And did he enjoy the travel on Batman?
He enjoyed it more than what I did, I tell you. No, they both done really well. They haven't left feed or water anywhere along the line. And I was a bit easy on him between when I left and when he raced, and he was just beside himself before the race. He crashed into the mobile barrier, caused a false start. The second time, he stepped away, but very, very slowly. And he's not the most reliable or tractable horse you've ever seen, but he's got average ability or a bit above average ability. So,
What was the response from the locals, first of all, when you arrived in South Australia to compete at Mount Gambier?
Oh, they were everywhere I've been, they're fine. But they know what it's like to have a horse that race in a race.
We just lost you for a sec there, Phil. You there?
Yeah, people have been very good.
Yep.
They realise that racing a horse where it's not suited by the handicapping system, they accept that I had to do something with the horse.
Yeah, and you, then you went up to Queensland, and you're meant to race in New South Wales, is that right?
Yeah, I was at Inverell for 3 or 4 days, and like all the rain, they put the races off on the trots off on the morning of the race, or the night before, I think. Then I come through to Redcliffe.
Yep. And then you won a race recently at Redcliffe, and in the race that we just heard, and then you're racing tonight. Can he win again?
He's got enough ability to win again, but it depends what he decides on.
And he's been a great horse for you as well. He's had, 180-odd starts, 135 starts for 13 wins and won more than $100,000. So he sounds like he's paying his way anyway.
Anyway, I've only had him back since the Christmas before this, 14 months ago, and he's had 80 starts in that time and earned over half his lifetime stakes. So he's a reasonably good horse. I've been able to win 3 races on him. There's not many horses I've done that on.
Yeah. So you'd be heading to Queensland, then will you come back and try and compete and try and win in every state on the way home, Victoria, New South Wales and Globe Derby, and then head back to WA?
It all depends on the horse, Gareth. As soon as he's had enough, I'll go home, whether it's this week, a month's time, or 2 months' time.
Yep.
He's had a hard campaign. It was probably a long time to go, but I had the time, and he needed a bit of a break, so we done it.
Sounds like it's working for both parties. It would be funny if you stop it when you're working during the travel. You probably don't, but on the side of the road anywhere to give him a little bit of exercise. But I've thoroughly enjoyed the story today. You packed up and you're travelling around the country and seeing Australia while you visit some harness racing tracks, and hopefully on Batman can win another couple of races to pay for the petrol on the way home anyway.
No, well, he's paid the trip already, so
yep. If
he does any more, it's a bonus.
Beautiful, mate. You make sure you let us know what the best roadhouses are and the best places to visit along the way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I can tell you where not to go to buy fuel.
All right, then. Where you maybe can give us a hint if we go across the Nullarbor. Where's the worst places?
The worst places... worst places, I think it's right on the border.
Yeah.
It's a border town.
Well,
one's $2.20 a litre and another one's $1.50, so...
They don't miss you. They're probably thinking you got no other option if you run out of petrol. good on you, Phil. Good luck tonight.
Thanks a lot, Gareth. Appreciate it.
RSM Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1-800-858-858. Counting down to the richest mile race in the world. RSM Central presents the All-Star Mile Show.
The All-Star Mile is starting to really heat up, and it's been one of those weekends, Greg Carton, a good morning to you, where you used to look at computer and you got into a habit checking out on the votes, but all of a sudden we don't know what's going on.
It was really difficult, Gareth, you're right. I'd been checking the votes virtually every 10 minutes for about 5 weeks, so when it got to the blackout on Friday night, when Catalyst and Alligator Blood had that great match race down the straight at Flemington, Galaxy Raider won the last. I was almost in autopilot going to the website to see if their votes had changed and hoping miracle upon miracle that the votes might have been. But not to be. The voting closed on Sunday night at midnight. They're going through a very rigorous audit process now with one of the big four companies undertaking that. And then around 12:30, 1 o'clock tomorrow at Caulfield, we'll announce the top 10 voted horses in All-Star Mile 2020. And as soon as that happens, we'll probably turn our attention to the next phase, which will be the five wildcards.
Did it exceed your expectations this time around for the second year with the votes coming in for the All-Star Mile?
Well, the interest that has been and the talkability around the race has been frenetic. It's been fantastic, actually. The votes have, again, we'll announce how many last year. I think one of the issues that we had this year is that we had less horses. We raised the bar. So there were less horses nominated, 130 down to 94. So we may not get big growth in the votes, but certainly the interest that it has generated has been amazing. And Alligator Blood, even when voting went dark, was almost double what the leading vote getter last year had got. So I wouldn't be surprised if he gets up around 19 or 20,000 votes when they are revealed tomorrow.
What do you think of watching that three-year-old race on Saturday where the Kiwi Star and the Queensland Star went head-for-head?
Well, I think hopefully it was the start of a great rivalry. Yeah. We knew how good Catalyst looked from afar. We talked about him last week. His win at Ellerslie was amazing. And for him to give a kilo to Alligator Blood and really take it to him all the way down the straight, they both found the front, so they were racing together throughout. Really put pressure on Alligator Blood. And to the Queensland Gelding's credit, he lifted for Ryan Maloney and was able to hold off Catalyst. So there's things that will play out over the next 2 weeks when they go to the Guineas. Probably a bigger field than there was at Flemington last week. They may not, or Catalyst may not ride so close to the pace maybe. And they'll be at level weights. And lots of other horses to come into contention. But it looks as though they are two outstanding three-year-olds. And now everyone's looking forward to the Australian Guineas on February the 29th. One for the ages, February 29th, only comes every 4 years. Yes. And it's going to be a very special contest between those two.
Level weight, 1,600 metres. It's nearly advantage Catalyst, isn't it, Greg?
Well, if you're doing performance ratings from Saturday, given the margin and the kilo swing, Catalyst comes out as a higher-rated horse. Last year in the world rankings, Catalyst was rated 115. Alligator Blood didn't appear in the international ratings for 2019. He had been beaten by Super Seth, but neither of them made it into the world's best horses. In the New Zealand race, I had him running to 116, and George Strickland, the New Zealand handicapper, had him running to the same figure. So if he's run to 116, he'll come out one higher than Alligator Blood. Mm. So Alligator Blood will run to 115. So they're world-class performances. They're genuine Group 1 numbers. And I think that those two horses can run to higher numbers as they go through 2020.
Would we all be millionaires if the handicapper and the rating system worked, because we would be backing winners left, right and centre. But for our listeners out there that just may not quite understand the handicapping process, when you analyse an Alligator Blood and, say, a Catalyst and even, say, a Super Seth these days, so what do you look for with your ratings and how do you get to a mark of 116?
Well, it's built around the horses that you run against, the weights that you carry in relation to those horses, and the beaten margin. So you generate it through those three. You're looking for horses who are running to a very consistent performance level that you can build the race around. That doesn't always happen with three-year-old horses in Australasia. We're usually quite conservative with our three-year-old ratings that we post internationally for them, as are the Japanese. And they don't really get higher marks until they run against the older horses. We saw that with Yes, Yes, Yes. Mm-hmm. Ended up 120 for his Everest win when he took on the older horses at Wait for Age. Castelvecchio, 120 for his second in the Cox Plate when he took on older horses at Wait for Age. So generally we're reasonably conservative. But we'll see where Super Seth fits in the scheme of things this week in the Futurity. Given the fact that Alabama Express was able to win the Oar, That Paul Richards, the father of Jamie Richards, who rode Melody Bell yesterday in the last piece of work, said she's not screwed down. She's going to be, you know, at her best in the All-Star Mile and beyond. There's a marvellous window of opportunity for Super Seth to beat the older horses on Saturday, and Colding will be a very good yardstick for that race. So the three-year-olds, I think, in the Futurity on Saturday and then coming together in the Guineas, is going to provide us with some really exciting racing.
Have you expected the dominance of the three-year-olds at Wait for Age this time around?
Well, it's interesting. If you go to the results of some of our Wait for Age races last year, Harlem won the Australian Cup at 100-1.
Blackheart Bard,
exactly, won the Underwood at 100-1. Samaretti won the Wait for Age race in Sydney at $33. And Castle Vecchio, as a three-year-old, ran second, as we said, in the Cox Plate. Yes, had won the sprint race up there. Loving Gabby had won the Mankato. So the three-year-olds have proven that they're right up to our best older horses. And hopefully these horses, again, going back to Catalyst, Castle Vecchio, Alligator Blood, will see them race on beyond their three-year-old season and try and get some of our older horses back to where they should be on the international scene and the ratings.
You're the best person to ask about this, and the most qualified regarding Superstorm. There's a few text messages coming through today. This is the WA star three-year-old that was maybe unlucky in a Kingston town, dominated first up in far weaker company than what he will meet over here. But do you think he's got the profile to be competitive in an Australian Guineas at around that $10 quote?
Well, he's a bit of a favourite for me because he's out of a mare called Supernova, who raced in Perth and was a very good sprint filly and got up to a mile. His run in the Kingston town was very good, but we know that KC, Neville Parnham's filly, won that race at big odds. Galo Shop, who had struggled a little bit on his injury comeback over here, ran second in the race. So he ran very well in the Kingston town. And I thought his performance in winning the challenge on Saturday was good enough, obviously, for them to continue over here. When you look at Naughty by Nature and Why Knight, who ran second and third, that was the first time Naughty by Nature had stepped out into black type company. She's a promising filly. But there's a big gap between what Superstorm has done in Perth. I think we had him running to about 106 or 108 in the Kingston town last December. So he's got to make up three or four lengths. But he could well be able to do that. We know that the Peters team have had not the greatest success moving over to Melbourne in recent years. So I'm hoping that can turn around when he measures himself up against the best three-year-olds in the Guineas.
Greg, the top 10 will be announced tomorrow in the voting. And there'll be a host of nervous connections out there and also some nervous punters who have voted for their favourite horse in the All-Star Mile. Do we expect surprises tomorrow without giving too much away?
Well, it's interesting for me because I don't know who the top 10 are at this stage.
Don't lie to us, Greg. You'd be like a little kid at Christmas looking under the Christmas tree, opening up the presents just slowly, knowing that what you are going to get tomorrow.
Well, it's good when you don't know, then you can't give away an answer that you shouldn't. So the top 10 will be revealed tomorrow. The good news is that for horses that don't make the top 10, there are still wildcard spots available. As an example, Blackheart, we know, was about 14th when it went dark. If he doesn't make it into the top 10 when it's announced tomorrow, then he's got the opportunity to win the Futurity, or even if he runs really, really well, a horse of his career performances and his popularity would see him a front runner for one of the wildcards. We're going to talk to Logan McGill, and his team have mounted a really good campaign with Goldfields. Hoping Goldfields or Galaxy Raider have made it into the top 10, but if they aren't, there's opportunities for them in the Blamey Stakes. So we'll talk to Logan a little bit later on. So top 10 revealed tomorrow, and that's as much as you're getting out of me, Gareth,
as far as
who's in it and who's out of it.
Just with the wild cards, we're about to take a break. How long do you get before you can make your decision to confirm those wild cards?
Well, we had our first meeting on Tuesday, the selection panel, which is myself, Paul Bloodworth, head of international, Josh Grimwood, head of racing operations, David Hagen, who's our senior handicapper, does all the Group 1 sprints, and Jake Norton from the Melbourne Racing Club. It was a bit of an idea session, seeing we have the futurity this week. We'll know more after that, and revealing the top 10 tomorrow. But last year we actually went very early with one of them, Happy Clapper. We haven't done that this year. We can make some announcements early if we need to.
You did make one on this show last week.
Now, I said that we might. Remind, it wasn't Castelvecchio, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think it was.
I said I'd make a call for Castelvecchio. Okay, and if they wanted one, there would be one there for them.
Yes.
Good on you, Gareth. So he's running in the Hobartville on Saturday, as is Microphone. Microphone. I'd love to see James Cummings take up a wild card. He won with Elise on Saturday. He won with Flit on Saturday. He's got a Villiers in the Chipping Norton. He's got Microphone in the Hobartville. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure James will have his phone by his side in the next week or so, hoping that we can ring him up and give him a wild card, because they were big players in the first original All-Star Mile.
Now, the Guineas won't be far away as well, of course, in a couple of weeks' time. So if a three-year-old comes out and wins as quickly, Greg, and it hasn't nominated for the All-Star Mile, can you put it in that All-Star Mile, or do they have to nominate?
No, they don't have to be nominated. Okay. And last year, Hawkshot ran second and we gave it a wild card. So Superstorm is another horse like that, can go straight in.
Be fascinating. I'd love to be able to bring RSN Central with the microphone into that panel to discuss who gets in or who misses out on a wild card spot.